Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Energy Unplugged, where we talk about all things energy and try to share information that helps people make good decisions personally in their lives, but also helps educate people and policymakers on things that we should be considering as we try to clean our environment and make the United States water and air much better than it has been in the past decade. So today we're really excited to have Brian Feehan, who is the executive director of the Industrial Truck Association, a really strong veteran in that area. And Brian, welcome. We're really happy to have you today.
Well, thank you very much, Stuart. It's a pleasure for me to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, good news. And as always, we have Mark Denton with Bossman Gas, who is our color commentator. And he's much funnier in person than he is on our podcast in general. But Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Okay.
Excited to have Brian on. We go back a long way.
Well, good. We're going to try to get you out of your shell today, Mark. What do you think of that?
Well, I try to tell you guys, if y'all will stay off of that technical, you know, when y'all get technical, I feel like those two dairy cows standing on the hill talking, and a milk truck goes by, and it says, grade A, pasteurized, homogenized, vitamin D milk, and those two cows look at each other and go, makes you feel sort of inadequate, doesn't it?
Exactly. Well, Brian, tell us a little bit about your background and yourself and how you made it to the Industrial Truck Association in that leadership role.
Well, it's been a long and windy road, Stuart, as you know a lot of it. You know, I was very fortunate 10 years ago to be approached by my predecessor, Bill Monwheel, who had been in my capacity for about 28 years. And he said to me, he goes, Brian, I'm going to start getting ready to retire and would be interested if you would put your hat in the ring to be considered as my replacement. And I said, okay, without really expecting much from it. And then one thing led to the next, and here I am 10 years into it. Prior to that, though, as you know, I started off in the propane business back in Europe working as a director for the World LP Gas Association based in Paris, France. And that was a marvelous time in my career for the 4 years that I spent doing that, traveling around the world, doing market development and sustainability, government relations at the international level, as well as the local level, helping LP gas organizations and companies across the world communicate more effectively with government agencies and institutions and pushing autogas for the most part. And then after that stint, I came back to the United States where I was the executive director of the Propane Vehicle Council for a couple of years. And really, I think we put a lot of focus on the autogas movement here in the United States, but also kind of expanded a little bit of what the Propane Vehicle Council did to also incorporate forklift industry, because we saw at the time, some threats to the propane business in the forklift industry. And as we all like to say, that's a regular paycheck for a lot of people in the propane industry. So we wanted to make sure we kept a focus on that. And then after we kind of really resurrected the Propane Vehicle Council, got some momentum behind it, we knew that there were three organizations in D.C. That's kind of overkill. After some discussions with leadership in the industry, we decided to merge the market development functions of the Propane Vehicle Council into the Propane Education Research Council, Tucker's organization. And then and the legislative components were moved over to the National Propane Gas Association. And I followed the market development side and went over to PERC and spent about 8 or 9 years with PERC before coming here.
So tell us exactly what the Industrial Truck Association does and its role in the material handling industry.
So we're a traditional trade association. We are celebrating our 70th year in its current form this year. So 2021, we're recognizing our 70th anniversary. So we've been around for a long time. We can actually trace our roots way back further. But in the current form that we are today, we've been around for 70 years. And basically, our constituency or our members are the manufacturers of forklift trucks and other vehicles that are used, as well as supply chain. So we've also got about 35 supplier members, and those can be anybody from Michelin Tire to all the various battery manufacturers and other component manufacturers that supply our forklift manufacturers. So out of the forklift manufacturers, we have about 24 brands right now, and that represents probably about 90% of North American market in terms of unit sales. So we've got a very strong manufacturing base and a very strong presence in North America. The ITA, we handle not just the United States, but Canada and Mexico as well. And we focus on a couple of different areas. Number one, international cooperation on standards development, which is a huge component for what we do. We also have a substantial engineering practice and work on practices that promote safety in the products of our members. We also have a very significant, sophisticated statistical program, and that is really one of the crown jewels of the organization, and it's used widely by our regular members and some of our associate members. And it's a fascinating program that I really started to learn much more about after moving over here. I knew about it in my days at PERC and utilized it somewhat as I was able to. But now being here and actually fully really learning how members use that information, it's amazing. It's every member goes into a secure website several times throughout the course of the month and enters a wide variety of data in terms of unit sales, what particular truck class they sold in, where it was sold, a lot of different pieces of information. And then at the end of the month, and usually by the fourth day or the fifth day of the following month, we will aggregate all of that data and then turn around and ship it back out to all of our regular members. So it's not only it's very accurate data because it's coming from our members themselves. It's also very timely data because we have a sophisticated program that allows us to turn around and get it back out, the aggregate data back out to the regular members very quickly. So it's not quite real time, but it's pretty darn close. And then the members use that data in a wide variety of applications. It shows them the trends that's taking place in the industry, allowing them to look at what manufacturing capacity needs they'll have and what certain types of products are moving and what regions of the country those products are moving. They look at what their performance is in the market relative to other members in the market. So it's a highly utilized piece of information that the organization puts out. And then I guess the final two components of really what we do are industry communications and networking. You know, as we all know, networking has been a challenge for the past 18 to 20 months. We've been able to overcome some of those challenges using technology, but it really cannot supplement or replace that face-to-face communication and contact that you get. So we're hoping to bring some of that back. And then we also do, we work quite closely with OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and we put on compliance officer training seminars for OSHA inspectors across the country. We usually do someplace between 3 and 6 different of those classes. They're an 8-hour class. They're limited in terms of size of how many people we can have. So we have about 25 OSHA inspectors, and we work with OSHA to determine what those locations will be where we put on those classes and train them on the latest and greatest technology as well as safety practices and what's different about the products that we have, so that then when they go back out and perform their duties, they're educated on the latest developments in the forklift industry itself. So we have a good relationship with OSHA. We're actually one of their we're in their ambassador program, which means that we've got a longstanding relationship with them and work closely on a variety of different topics.
Well, that's actually an imperative for you all because many of the material handling equipment is operating indoors, and you have to be concerned about indoor air quality, safety practices, and everything else. That's an important role for the association, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a lot of times when people think and hear of the word OSHA or OSHA inspectors, you know, they kind of retract a little bit. And we've taken a different approach. We've said, why don't we embrace the OSHA inspectors and OSHA? Why don't we make sure that they are trained and educated on the latest developments of what's going on in our world and our products so that when they do go into a facility, they have the latest information available to them. And perhaps there may be a relationship that exists between wherever they're going, and the OSHA inspector themselves or the end user, the customer. So as opposed to trying to pushing something away that may be perceived as a bit scary, we've turned that around years ago and said, let's embrace it so that we know that they're educated and they're not just guessing on what should be.
Yeah, that's such an important point, Brian. I'm really glad you brought that up. I think a lot of people in business tend to view regulators as a threat and keep them at arm's length. But I can tell you in our experience, when we're doing EPA certifications for our autogas conversion systems to convert gasoline vehicles into propane autogas vehicles, we have found that the vast majority of the regulators are sincere. They're trying to do a good job. And the more that we can work with them and educate them on the peculiarities or the different variables associated with what we're doing, they appreciate that, as opposed to just always trying to come after you to stop something or create a difficult business environment.
That's exactly right. You know, everybody will eventually face some of those difficult situations, but I always believe you're better served if you have a relationship with that organization as opposed to none whatsoever. So when those sticky moments do arise, and they will, you at least have an outlet or you've got somebody to talk to. Those are definitely the minority cases. Right. I agree with you. They're more often working as a partnership than they are in any other capacity.
You know, I'm fascinated by your statistical database capabilities. I would imagine, I mean, you look at some of the things our Federal Reserve is doing right now, and including making up words like transitory. I was like, what does that mean? I had to go look it up. I mean, I thought I knew what it was, but what did it mean in the context? Well, okay, temporary. So temporary inflation is, well, I guess you haven't gone to buy a steak at the grocery store lately or try to go buy anything with steel or aluminum in it. But you probably, as an association, have great insights into economic trends, both regionally and nationally, with that database, because the movement of goods and services is the proverbial canary in the coal mine for so many activities, right?
Well, yes. We often refer to it as a leading indicator of economic activity that's going to take place. So, you know, and if you really get deep into the weeds, you start looking at what products that we have. You know, there's five different truck classes, class 1 through 5. Classes 1, 2, and 3 are electric products, and classes 4 and 5 are your internal combustion engine products, propane, diesel, and some gasoline. And, you know, they all have different functions, but you can kind of start to see what market segments are moving and what market segments are not moving based on the unit sales in which particular truck class and where they're going. So, yeah, it's definitely an economic indicator, and we use it as such.
Well, you mentioned class 4 and 5. Propane has been a fuel for forklifts, and in the case, as you just mentioned, class 4 and 5 for decades. What do you think some of the trends are in terms of why they're used in certain applications? The electric forklift has made gains over the last 20 years. But why are there still internal combustion engines? What do you think some of the reasons alternative fuels such as propane, clean burning, and that can be used indoors, but why are they still out there in such prominence in class 4 and 5?
Well, class 4 and 5 is, you know, last year when you look at the market, you know, we always we're trying to figure out if we're always going to have to keep an asterisk next to 2020 with our statistics, because when you look back at the March, April, May, June timeframe of last year, we saw not only in the internal combustion markets, but in most of the markets were down substantially during the beginning and the heights of the pandemic. And a lot of that was driven, especially in class 4 and 5, based on the applications in which they're used. So class 5, the larger applications, are half of that market is probably the rental business. So outdoor concerts, sporting events, and the like. And then when you see the rental business and those types of events not taking place, you saw a dramatic decrease in terms of class 5 market, right?
Right.
Now, if you look at – I just pulled the numbers the other day. If you're looking at – if you're comparing May of 2020 to May of 2021 – We are in the class five business up, you know, over 150% to date.
Good grief.
Compared to last year.
Wow.
So that's, you know, and that kind of gets back to your question about why are some of the IC engines and the propane engines and that and those products still prevalent after decades of service? Well, you know, they all perform a function and, you know, it's, they have the power, they have the capacity, they have the ease of operation, they have the mobility, if you will. So, you know, there's a function that they perform, and they perform well. Yes, there's certainly been a lot of advancements in battery technology, and we can talk about that. But there's still some functions that take place that really are designed for an internal combustion engine.
Well, and one of the advantages, and Mark, you know this very well with your experience in the forklift business that relates to propane, you can run 10-hour shifts and change out a cylinder in 5 minutes. And the mobility part of it, I think that's probably where you're going with that, Brian, right?
Yeah, mobility, but also, you know, when you have an application, for instance, if you're in an agricultural application, you don't necessarily always have the ability to bring that product back to a facility where there's a charging application. Or if you're in the construction business, you may not also have the opportunity to bring that product back to the facility to charge it. So, you know, your options are then looking at, you know, propane or an internal combustion engine. So there's certain applications that really lend themselves to mobility, that type of mobility, to the internal combustion engine.
That's one of the things we've talked about in the transportation sector, the transformation, so-called transformation that's taking place right now. Certainly there are places where an electric vehicle might make sense, but when you're talking about the movement of goods and services, and miles driven in the course of a day and payloads on the truck, whether it's a food truck driving into New York City or delivering any other goods for that matter, electric vehicles are at this point not ready for that type of operational profile. So what I think I hear you saying is sort of similarities in regards to the material handling business.
There certainly are a lot of similarities, and especially I think when you start looking at infrastructure. You can relate the forklift industry back to the propane side of the world to infrastructure development for on-road vehicles, for the commercial mowing applications, for airport ground service equipment applications. The list is endless when you start to compare the developments of infrastructure. And it's interesting when you mention the word alternative fuel and propane. And I think it's important to remind everybody that, you know, our industry, the forklift industry, propane is not an alternative fuel. In fact, it's the standard fuel. And it's been used for years and years and years and years and years. And so it's the common standard fuel for internal combustion engines.
Well, Brian, and one of those reasons that we found is with gasoline, for example, or diesel, to be able to go fuel that forklift that is run out of fuel in the middle of a warehouse can be a real safety issue. Where with propane, they just go get it, fill a new bottle full of propane, change it out. And you talk about the rental market, and that makes propane really a great product there because of the portability of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and there has been a lot of developments in increased efficiency in terms of battery technology where you can now run up to 8 shifts on one charge. There's, you know, continuous development in terms of improving performance of some of those electric products, and you know, that's wonderful, and we'll continue to see that take place. At the same time, there's also been improvements in propane technology. So, you know, it's a very innovative industry. I think it's often looked at as when you see a forklift in operation, it's, you look at it, you see it, it's usually in a very rough or tough environment. But when you literally dive into the companies that support those products and how they actually operate, there's an awful lot of time and effort and money spent on research and development and improving the efficiency of products, both on the propane side or the internal combustion engine side, as well as the electric side. So there's definitely a lot of innovation that's taking place.
Well, that's important, even in the internal combustion engine, as we make this transition to whatever. So a lot of the primary customers, particularly large corporations, say a BMW manufacturing facility, and you could go on down the list, they all have sustainability programs these days, and they're trying to work towards zero emissions. What are some of the effects that your members, the manufacturers of the material handling equipment, are seeing, and how are they adopting to some of the requirements that these, not just large corporations, primarily large corporations, are having in regards to the ones that have sustainability programs and are trying to play a role in getting to the point where we have zero emissions?
Well, one of the ways that I look at that and we look at that is what's the market requiring? What's dictating the market and which direction it goes in? And one of those market drivers is clearly government regulations, driving regulations towards increasing use of electricity. For instance, the California Air Resources Board, CARB, is in the process right now of looking at forklifts in the state of California. And their proposal, as it stands today, is to try to electrify everything that's 12,000 pounds and less. And there's a phase-in period in which that would take place. I think it's starting in 2025. I have to look at my notes. But so that's a regulatory-driven initiative. And then you also see, you know, there's other states in other areas that are driving towards electricity. And I think that, you know, that is a direction that people are going in, and that's okay. We need to embrace it, but it has to be done in a smart fashion, right? You can't just say all of a sudden we're going to go from internal combustion engines to electricity overnight. It's some magical date. It has to be done in a way that can accommodate from an economic standpoint, so you don't bring an economic penalty to the end user, to the customer, where you don't bring economic penalty to the small businesses that are out there that support that particular market segment. But at the same time, recognizing that there are functions and there are challenges and limitations to everything that you do, and that internal combustion engines have a role to play in performing some of those functions where right now electricity may not, or electric product may not necessarily serve that particular marketplace. So, you know, when you look at regulatory environment, when you look at a policy perspective, there are many opportunities. There's many different prescriptions that can be utilized from a government policy perspective. But the ones that really make the most sense are the ones that really take into consideration those points that I just made, but also make sure that you've got a long lead time in terms of implementation in the correct approach to the time frame in which those are implemented, and so that you put those in place, and so you have a long runway, if you will, for everybody to factor those considerations in, so that they can prepare and predict a little bit more clearly what the future is going to be like, as opposed to changing policies every couple of years.
Well, of course, you mentioned the advancements in battery technology on the forklifts. But you also still have to consider the source of electricity. And that's not a transition that's going to take place in 3 or 5 or even 10 years. It's going to take many decades. So when you say zero emissions, you really have to look at the source of the electricity and their movements on that. But one of the things we've been talking about in previous podcasts, Brian, is that the costs associated with new transmission lines, windmill farms, solar farms and so forth are significant. And that's going to cause some issues if you have the runway, as you mentioned, too short, that there's going to be some really high electricity prices, which disproportionately affect middle and lower income folks in our country. So this transition, while desired, is also one that has to be managed appropriately to balance these type of things, the equity argument, the affordability issue, and not just the environmental alone.
I agree. And not only is it the affordability, but it's also reliability, right? And, you know, as we all know, the grid has got a lot of challenges to it, you know, the inefficiency of the grid itself. So you've got, all of a sudden, you're having this great movement towards everything electric. Well, the reliability of the grid is definitely suspect when you start moving in those types of directions. So, yes, you need a long time before you can actually execute on 100% electric or whatever the number may be, you know, in 50 or 75 years down the road. And that reliability, I think, are some of the challenges that you see already today. So not only is it site-to-source discussions that need to take place in terms of the environmental impact, but also the reliability and what the ramifications are of a grid system that cannot perform when you need it to. Not only about air conditioning and those types of things, but, you know, as you know, when the power goes out, you've got refrigerators that are holding medicine. You've got your meat packing facilities or the grocery stores that need that reliability that have to rely on a backup generator if they have it. And then, of course, you know, those generators are not usually the most efficient burning pieces of equipment. So those are going to introduce, additional particulate matter or whatever it may be into the air. It's going to be a comprehensive approach to this direction that people are going in.
Right. So, Brian, just of the internal combustion forklifts out there, what's the LPG share of that? Is it 85, 90%, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah. So out of the class 4 and 5 markets, which are the internal combustion engines, I would say the propane is at least 85%, if not a little bit higher, of that particular, of those two classes, with the remainder being diesel and a little bit of gasoline. But it's propane is dominant in those two classes.
Right. And, you know, Mark, some of the things in the past, and I would say in the past, is the operation or the fuel going into the forklifts has caused inefficiencies at times with getting carbon or C5 heavy ends in there. What are some of the things that you've been doing to remediate that in terms of filtration systems and dispensers and things?
So that is a very important point, that propane is historically very clean, but it does have some heavy ends that come out as a product of vaporizing the fuel and so forth. And so we have worked with companies to develop a carbon filter in addition to the traditional filters that pick up the metal. And those carbon filters are doing a really good job of filtering that propane before it ever goes in the vehicle. It's making a huge difference on the autogas and as well as forklift.
Well, that's an important point. As we've always talked about, the LPG or liquefied petroleum gas and propane is extremely clean in terms of the greenhouse gas emissions. There's no methane associated with propane, but there are things in the chain of custody that sometimes get in there and contaminate it. But these filtration systems are, I think, allowing the forklifts as well as the transportation vehicles to operate without having those issues, because we're filtering it out before it ever gets into the vehicle or the forklift. That's a key thing. One of the advancements, and you mentioned innovations a while ago, Brian, I think those are the kind of things that we have to continue to do in our industry to ensure that these forklifts operate at an optimal level.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember, back in my time with PERC, when we really started looking into the distribution stream and how the propane product is moved from the production to the end use, and the many hands in the many different places that it has to go through before it can get to the customer, there's opportunity to take care of the product as it moves throughout that distribution stream. And as Mark just mentioned, there's been, I think, a significant advancements that have taken place. And I think the recognition has also taken place that you need to take care of the product as it moves from the productions to the end use. And we used to talk about 15 years ago, contamination of fuel, and it would pop up more so, and you could identify on a map certain regions across the country where, you could expect to see a little bit of a problem here and there once in a while. And to be honest with you, I have not heard that much about that in the last several years. And I think it's probably due to some of the work that you guys have been doing over the years to take care of the product from the production to the end use.
Right, exactly. That has been a major focus. We had a clean fuel, and sometimes we messed it up in moving it around the country, which is one of the great advantages. We can move, just like other energy sources, we can move the product around and get it places, but you have that the distribution systems that need to be attended to as well. So you mentioned safety and OSHA a little while ago. What are some of the things the ITA has done to innovate to enhance forklift safety? What are some of the advancements that you've seen?
Oh, there is a long list of advancements over the years, like many industries. But if you look back, I think probably one of the biggest achievements that the ITA has accomplished in its 70 years of, has been working with OSHA back in 1998, over those many years to have OSHA implement the operator training requirement. So operators have to be trained on how to use a forklift, right? So there's hands-on training that has to take place. And ever since that regulation law went into place, you can see when that took place, the number of incidences and accidents that have occurred have come down dramatically over the years because of the training that's taken place and ensuring that operators are properly trained. And not only are those numbers coming down, but the number of units that we have in operation have gone up. So it's magnified even more that not necessarily is captured when you see, the reduction in injuries and accidents. But that has to be, you have to remember that the overall number of units entering into the marketplace has also grown substantially over the years. Along with all of the various OEMs, technology innovation, overhead guards, stability, all lots of different operator restraint systems. I mean, the list goes on for a long time. One of the things that our industry did 8 years ago was we all recognized that safety is paramount to the industry and it's at the forefront of everything that we do. We didn't necessarily have a mechanism, if you will, or a methodology to really get out there and talk about what we have been doing about safety over the years. And so that was one of the genesis behind the ITA creating National Forklift Safety Day, was to create a day where all the manufacturers would take off their company hats and put on the industry hat and unify behind safety. And it's been pretty successful over the years, I think, in terms of the awareness that we're trying to do. It's really an awareness campaign to educate people, government institutions, end user communities, and others of the need for operator training. I remember, I think we just had our eighth one just a few weeks ago, actually. It was in June. And we do it every second Tuesday in June. And June happens to also be National Safety Council Month. So we selected that date because of those reasons. And, we have an event that we put on in Washington, D.C. with the first one. We had the head of OSHA speak at it. We've had members of Congress. We have safety experts. And we have industry representatives on a panel that get up and talk about safety. And over the years, we've seen that kind of grow to not only to ITA members. I mean, it's open to everybody, anybody that would like to participate. But we've seen it grow to the OEMs having open houses at their facilities, giving away training material and training classes, to educating the public and the community about what they do and why safety is so important. Then that has now expanded to the dealer base. So we have a lot of dealers across the country that are promoting National Forklift Safety Day and the need for operator training. And that is even extended further to some of the customer base. Because of the COVID, we had to take it virtually. We had over 650 people register for our, hour and a half session that took place on June 8th from 9 to 11. And that's a substantial reach that you cannot forget about. So safety has been paramount to the industry. We've seen what improvements in innovation and safety can do in terms of reducing injuries and accidents. And then, of course, the continuation of our OSHA compliance officer training seminars to make sure that they are aware of all these new developments.
That's good stuff. Education is the key. We're talking with Brian Feehan, the executive director of the Industrial Truck Association, whose members, manufacturers, make forklifts and material handling equipment. Brian, one of the things that I'm a great believer in, sometimes feel like I'm a bit out on an island, is hybridization, whether it's putting a rooftop solar with a small battery and a prime power generator system to provide all the needs for electricity and power in a home or a business, or whether it's in a vehicle. And there's been some discussion over the last decade in terms of hybridization of forklifts, electric battery combined with the internal combustion engine. It seems you can get the best of both worlds. Has there been any progress on the hybridization at this point, or is it still in its infant stages?
I believe it's still in its infant stages. You know, that's to my knowledge, in North America, there are no products that are available in a hybrid fashion in the forklift industry. So it would still be something that's an R&D initiative that may be going on. You know, there's been a lot of introduction of some products in terms of fuel cell applications, as well as new developments in propane and new developments in battery. But I agree. I think that there should be an opportunity for the hybridization of some forklift products in the right applications. And I think one of the biggest challenges that the hybrid movement would face right now is the cost, right? So it's a very cost competitive environment, the forklift industry. So you've got to make sure that, number one, it's the cost of the product is not putting itself out of the market, you know, just eliminating the opportunity, but also the durability requirements of what the conditions that these products operate in. I look at some of the bigger end of the class five markets when you've got diesel applications taking place, and the regulatory movement against diesel has been a challenge that's been going on for decades and that's going to continue. I see an opportunity for hybrid applications in that. There's also some other hybrid applications, I think, in this larger class five market. So I think it's a worthwhile pursuit. You just got to remember the guardrails there of durability and cost.
Well, I think those are probably the guardrails for a lot of the energy transformation that's being discussed. And you're right, you have to be competitive, and we have to keep your manufacturers have to keep the cost reasonable, so those costs don't ultimately get passed on to the consumer or other businesses that are buying these pieces of equipment. So, Mark, you have talked a little bit about the filtration systems. Some of the things that our industry is working on are related to changing the fuel mix for LP gas and renewables, and perhaps DME blended in with traditional propane. Do you want to comment on anything related to that? Because the carbon intensity of renewable propane is 14, and an electric vehicle is 39. So it's got some great benefits from a carbon intensity and emissions perspective.
No, I think you make a great point. I mean, when you're looking at meeting sustainability demands and changes and so forth, and you have existing propane lifts, you know, one of the almost immediate improvements would be if you just changed from fossil or traditional propane to renewable propane. Brian, are you guys having any conversations? Are you seeing that happening out in the market?
I am not personally. I think that that's still something that's being discussed and considered, but that's going to be done at this stage of the game. Something like that would be done at the OEM, individual OEM level. So it's not necessarily an industry initiative or an industry issue at this stage of the game. But I do believe that there's an opportunity for it. You know, if there's an opportunity to have sustainable propane or renewable propane enter into the marketplace, then it does create opportunities for the situation that we were talking about earlier with the California Air Resources Board's initiative to electrify 12,000 pounds and less. You know, does that qualify as a different product? So from an internal combustion engine perspective. And I think that those are probably issues that I'm not sure if they've been addressed in the low carbon fuel standard or not. And if they have been, is there a discussion that's going on between the regulators in California that are handling low carbon fuel standard and those at CARB that are handling the electrification? So when those things start to happen is when we'll probably get involved.
Well, Stuart, you can speak to that. You know, we're talking about a drop in fuel. You know, we're not talking about having to change anything on the lift truck in order to be able to run renewable propane. So, Stuart, you could certainly speak to that.
Well, no, I think that's a great point. The molecular structure of renewable propane is identical to that of traditional propane. And it is, I think, Brian, to your point, it's up to us as a propane industry. And the natural gas folks are doing a nice job with it to bring these renewable fuels to the marketplace and go through the work at NREL and other places to get the carbon intensity score in order to make them available. Because if we make a drop-in fuel, your truck manufacturers don't really have to change anything. They don't have to change anything on the lift itself. So that's something our industry, after many years of discussion, is fully engaged on now. And we hope to get enter those discussions, particularly in California, as you mentioned, Brian, to say, look, we need to have a discussion about this. The low carbon fuel standard should consider this. Part of the problem is I think we should set goals and not be prescriptive and say, here's how we're going to do it. And that's one of the issues with the electrification of everything. It's very prescriptive. Tell us the goal. Let's let the marketplace and innovative companies and entrepreneurs work in some of it funded by the Department of Energy, the research and development aspect of it, but get it to the marketplace and consider multiple paths to accomplishing our goals that we have for our country.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, when the government picks one, you're eliminating a lot of other factors or a lot of other opportunities, a lot of other products, and you need them all, right? There's not going to be, as we used to say, there's no one silver bullet, but it really needs to be a buckshot approach to reaching whatever those goals are and state what the goals are and then figure out how we get there. And it can be more than one particular application.
Right. So, Brian, we've talked a lot about it so far, but I guess I would just like to hear your closing thoughts on the future of the industrial truck industry and the products that it's providing. I think you should be very proud and your members should be proud that even during COVID, when people for the last 18 months have been working from home and many companies still aren't allowing their employees back in the office, but we have people that were out there moving goods and services and products around so they could stay at home and still eat. I think that shows you the crucial role that your members play in their customers in keeping things moving around our country. But how do you see the future?
Well, you make a good point about, early in COVID, one of the first things that we did when I think we all recognized the challenges and that we're going to be faced as a country, we worked with various institutions, not only the Department of Homeland Security, but also the Council of Mayors and National Governors Association and a variety of different organizations to ensure that our industry was classified as essential workers, as the propane industry was. So, and it's that, and the reason why is exactly what you're talking about. You can't move anything without a forklift. I challenge everybody often, take a look around the room that you're sitting in right now and see if you can find something that has not been touched by a piece of material handling equipment at some point in time in its life. So everything has to get moved and distributed at some point in time. And in order to maintain the economy, you've got to have the forklift and you've got to have the operator out there. And then you've got to have the manufacturers that have the parts and supply and technology and training to service that equipment when needed, and also to make sure that there's availability of products so to continue the manufacturing of it. So it's, that was for us as an industry was wonderful to see that take place. Moving forward, looking at the industry, if you were to project where it's going, when I first started 10 years ago, I remember I used to write things down and give presentations and talk about the overall market itself as 160,000 annual unit market. And that was considered to be really good. And then when we broke that 200,000 unit mark a couple of different times beforehand, and that was considered to be a fantastic market. And we had 9 straight years of growth when I first started, and we had 1 year or so that dipped a little bit. But now we're, especially in 2020, we saw a little bit of a decline in the overall markets, which was expected. And to be honest with you, it was almost expected pre-COVID, because 2019 was the third best year on record that the industry had. So we knew that there had to be some sort of a pullback in terms of the real growth that we had seen for the 9 straight years before that. And now, Stuart, we still are pinching ourselves a little bit, and we know that this is not going to be throughout the course of 2021. But you know, if we were to annualize our numbers of where we are today, we see on a monthly basis numbers that we traditionally see in the months of November and December, which are the best months that we usually have. Would be over 260,000, well over 260,000-270,000 units annualized. So, as a matter of, you know, it's a huge number.
Yeah, that's really great news.
And then, you know, with the advancements in some of the technology that we've been talking about, we see a continued push in from the OEMs in research and development. We see continued threats and opportunities coming from government regulators and government policy. We also see probably a similar situation to the propane industry in terms of consolidation. You know, we've witnessed that in the last 10 years here in terms of the consolidation of brands that's been taking place, as well as the distribution components of the industry. So there's a lot of parallels that can be drawn between the propane industry and the forklift industry.
Right. Well, I think the importance of innovation and continuing to innovate, whether it's in the battery technology going on the equipment or the internal combustion engine, which there have been tremendous advances there. So, Mark, I've known Brian nearly 20 years, and I think you go back pretty far with him as well. I don't want to do anything to embarrass our guest, who's been fantastic, but, I mean, I know you've got some stories going back with him.
Oh, yes.
Well, you know, I could tell one story on Brian if you really want to hear it.
I want to hear it.
Yeah. Okay. So, Brian, I'll test your memory a little bit. You and I and the late, great Henry Boddy were at a trade show in Orlando years ago, and we went to a place called Howl at the Moon, and it was appropriately named. And you and I and Henry consumed, let's just say, a lot of adult beverages. And the next morning at 8 o'clock, you made a presentation, and you were in a coat and tie, you were clean, and your presentation was flawless. And I looked at Henry and said, man, I'm not even sure what my last name is. And here this guy gets up here and he gives this perfect presentation on about 4 hours sleep. And Henry looks at me and he goes, dude, you need to understand, he's a professional.
I remember that. You know, I think what I really remember mostly about that was that one time when we were in the Howl at the Moon, and I saw a Hawaiian shirt on a guy probably sneak up a little too high, and I thought to myself, I'm going on a diet. But there have been many of those circumstances, Mark, and we've enjoyed together. And Stuart, you and I have done the same thing, and
right.
You know, I think it's one of the best components of the job is you get to work with great people. And that's the case in the propane industry and the industrial truck industry. So it's, you know, and those relationships and friendships last forever.
That's very true. Well, Brian, we have really been appreciative, or we are very appreciative of your coming on with us to talk about the Industrial Truck Association and the products that your folks make and your members make to move the goods and services around this country. And you've been great. Thankful that you took the time to do so, and I really look forward to seeing you. Maybe we're all going to be getting out a little bit more in 2021 and 2022 than we have during the past year, or 2020 at least. So I look forward to catching up, and I will watch you and Mark have adult beverages, and I'll babysit both of you guys.
Thanks for joining us. It's been great having you.
Well, I appreciate both of you guys having me on. You know, this has been a treat for me, and it's really good to hear your voices. And Stuart, I echo, I can't wait to see you guys in person again.
All right, good news. Well, we've had Brian Feehan of the Industrial Truck Association with us today, and thank you to all of our listeners. We're getting quite an uptick in our followers and listeners here in recent months, and we're really appreciative. And hopefully we've provided a little information to educate you on all things energy. This is Stuart Weedye with Energy Unplugged, and Mark Denton, thank you.